Kuuntelet webbidevaus.fi podcastin jaksoa numero 43. Mun nimi on Antti.
Mun nimi on Riku.
Morjesta.
Moro.
Tämä onkin toinen kerta, kun me nauhoitetaan tämä jakso, koska ennen meni ihan pummiksi. Se on, tiedätkö, mikä on vaikeinta toisen kertaan nauhoittamisessa?
Kun on puhunut ne samat asiat jo kerran.
Niin, tai siis se, että kun edellisellä kerralla tuli joku ad hocina niin kuin joku tosi hyvä vitsi.
Jep.
Sit sä nauroit sille.
Jep.
Tai päinvastoin. Niin nyt en mä nyt voi kertoa sitä samaa vitsiä, kun et sä nyt sille enää naura.
En niin.
Se tuntuu jotenkin niin sillai... niin. En tiedä, ei auta mitään. Meillä oli hyvä, se oli niin, siis se oli täydellinen.
Se oli priima.
Silleen niin kuin toi, ketä ne on ne... Kaksi kaveria, jotka teki se Destiny-nimisen elokuva, jolla on se orka, Tenacious D.
Joo.
Niillä on se biisi, siis, se Destiny.
Joo. Siis mä kuuntelin niitä biisejä ihan sairaan monta kertaa silloin, kun ne tuli. Mä oon kattonut se leffa varmaan viidestä.
Peak of Destiny.
Jep.
Mutta se biisi, se Destiny, oliko se Destiny sen biisin nimi kanssa?
Joo, siis mun mielestä joo. Sitten niillä ainakin se, on se biisi myös se Peak of Destiny.
Niin, ei, mä puhun nyt siitä biisistä, mikä oli sellainen, mikä kertoo siitä, kuinka itse saatana... tuli ja sanoi niille, että teidän pitää tehdä nyt maailman paras biisi. Ja sitten ne tekee sen maailman parhaan biisin ja ne soittaa sen sille pirulle siinä. Mutta tämä biisi kertoo siitä, kuinka ne ei enää muista, miten se meni, mutta ne teki biisin siitä, kuinka tällä tavalla kävi.
Vitsi, pitäisi katsoa uudelleen.
Joo, ja se on ihan hyvä biisi kyllä se, mikä se, sekin biisi.
Jep, sitten niillä on se tribute kanssa.
Se on itse asiassa tribute, se on se biisi.
Niin on, joo.
Mä sekoitan nyt...
It's just a tribute.
Joo. Koska se on tribuutti sille biisille, mikä ne teki sille pirulle. Tietysti.
Joo. Hei, just näin.
Pari viikkoa sitten käytiin React Finland-nimisessä yleisötapahtumassa.
Kyllä.
Ja nyt ollaan sieltä sitten selvitty ja kasattu kauhean määrä kaikennäköistä äänimateriaalia, haastatteluita erilaisten ihmisten kanssa. Ja tässä jaksossa meillä on nyt, koska siis React Finland oli tehty niin, että nämä talkit oli järjestetty silleen aika... karkealla kädellä teemoittain. Ensimmäinen teema oli tilanhallinta, niin nyt meillä on tässä ensimmäisessä jaksossa nyt 3 haastattelua. Tässä on Mobaxen ja Immerin kehittäjä Michel Westraatte ensimmäisenä haastatteltavana, sitten on X-State-nimisen kirjaston kehittäjä David Kursit haastateltavana, ja sitten viimeisenä on sellainen tuplahaastattelu, missä on Luka Matteis ja Farzad Yüz puhumassa sitten tämmöisestä behavior-driven what not mind-boggling systeemeistä, mitkä saattoi olla meikälle vähän liian korkealentoisia, mutta Riku ymmärtää tuolla parralla niitä.
Joo. Ja mä olin ainakin ihan pähkinöinä siitä, että ylipäätään päästiin puhumaan tommosille tyypeille.
Niin vaikka sä et ole mikään fanboy.
Mä sanoin vielä Antille, että mä en ole mikään fanboy.
Sitten ihan polvet pehmeinä.
Siis tajuaksa se on tehnyt Immeri.
Mutta hei, Michel puhui tosiaan, hän piti keynotein täällä. Ja aiheena, tai otsikkona oli Mobax the Journey, ja siinä hän puhui nimensä mukaisesti nyt sitten Mobaxesta, ja sitten minkälaista on kehittää tällaista open source-projektia, mikä on aika suosittu, ja mitä käytetään erilaisissa ihmeellisissä jutuissa, niin kuin vaikka hänellä tuli esiin, että jossain vaiheessa, että jossain Battlefield-pelissäkin oli Mobax käytössä jossain valikoissa tai whatever.
What?
Noin. Niin se oli... Erinomainen talkki kannattaa käydä tsiikaa se tuolta YouTubesista, mutta tässä meidän tällainen director's kommentaari nyt sitten siihen talkkiin.
Kyllä, nauttikaa. Michel, hi.
Hi.
Welcome to our podcast.
Thanks.
Who are you? What do you do?
So, my name is Michel Westraatte. Don't try to pronounce my last name. It's impossible, even for Dutch people. So, I'm from the Netherlands. Most people know me from my open source work.
Yeah.
I developed libraries like Mobix and Immer. And also I'm kind of doing a lot of workshops, consultancy, conference talks.
Yeah.
Quite random stuff.
It's pretty cool because I've used Immer a lot. And yeah, I totally love it. It's great. And it's cool to be talking to you. It's kind of surreal in a sense.
I have not used Immer, but I've been using Mobex, in our latest project quite a lot actually. So thank you for that, and thank you for all your work.
Welcome.
Yep. How do you see the current state management, kind of the current solutions that we have? We have Redux, we have Mobex. How do you see the whole world of state management at the moment?
I think the most interesting stuff is still yet to come. because I think Suspense will have some influence on it.
Oh, okay.
Especially related to like local component state, like really UI related state, like what is the state of my data fetches and that kind of things.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I think a lot of people are like reevaluating like what state management means to them now that hooks are available and context is standardized. But I don't think they changed in the end that much. I think Mobix and Redux both have the same strong story that like if you want to manage your state outside just your component tree, then they're very useful. Some people are discovering because they defaulted to Redux, for example, that they now no longer need it because they have your hooks and context.
Yep.
Basically, that's just a signal that you didn't need it before.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes, because like hooks and context, they didn't introduce new capabilities to React. They just made a way better API for it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's at regular intervals, I come across Medium think pieces that say you don't need Redux, you don't need whatever, but then they tend to go to the other extreme, say you never need this, but obviously the truth is somewhere in between.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, cool.
How do you feel about so many people using Mobax?
It's always it's a bit unreal.
Yeah.
On one hand, that's a bit sad. Like when you do open source and you like put stuff on GitHub and you put on NPM, like you have stats like stars and downloads.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the end, they don't really tell anything.
Yeah.
They don't tell like how many different people are using it, how many different companies, and which kind of ways they are using it, how important it is to them. It's all like you don't really see any effect in that sense. The only real feedback you get is by being at conferences and then people coming to you and telling you like, hey, it solves this and that problem for us.
And also the issue list.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Yep.
Yes.
Do you
guess? But I think also that doesn't tell that much because most issues are filed by people that don't know like how to approach a problem in general,
which is
often more related to like how should I set up and organize my application,
and
not so much to the technology. So I think the vast majority of the people using a library, you just don't see or hear anything.
Yep.
Pretty
true.
Cool. I loved your talk about the you were talking about the story of Mobex, and it was a brutally honest and eye-opening thing. I've been discussing. I don't have any open source libraries that I maintain, but I did a previous episode with an ex-colleague of mine who has something that's like moderately popular, and we were discussing about this. What's the responsibility of you as an open source contributor or maintainer? And I don't know, we don't probably have any solution. Do you do this as your like main gig? Do you get any income from Mobex, or is it just like a side hustle?
So I now kind of switched careers recently. Like a few months ago I left my company and became independent.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of make money from Mobex.
Yeah,
but it's like more in form of doing workshops and consultancy. And the end, it turns out to be, and that's also what I actually was hoping for, but it's pretty hard to get an income from just doing maintenance.
All right.
So you basically get income from everything that distracts you from doing the maintenance.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's kind of the sad part about it.
It is crazy because there's so many, like, think of, like, super popular projects that everyone uses, like Babel or something, that and how people just take it as a given, so that of course Babel exists, of course we can use it, and of course someone is responsible having it work, and then they are relying their business on those tools. But it's crazy that there's no like bigger mechanism,
especially, and like there are some projects that kind of achieved to get it working. Babel is one example, Webpack is the other one, I think. But then if you look at like how hard it was, like basically they have a developer which as kind of full-time busy just making sure things get sponsored and out in the open.
Yeah.
And so he's just doing acquisition basically. And
yeah.
So that's still not like the ideal world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it probably affects the quality of the library quite a bit if you don't have time to for instance, write the documentation or?
Yeah, I think it's mostly suffers. I think the technical quality doesn't suffer from it too much because, like, once libraries are really popular, they're also already pretty stable.
Yep.
But best practices and documentation, and those are the things that are really time consuming to do very well. And because you never find the time to do that really well, you will keep seeing the same answers over and over again, and you're like, I know the answer, and I could write it down. But it's
Yep. Then I would have cool. to write it down.
Yeah.
One last question. You want to shoot?
Sure. So not everyone knows everything about everything, and we are battling with this imposter syndrome that's very common in our field. So in order to battle that, do you have anything that you would like to get better at that you are not yet familiar with?
It's very true. It is like... people think there's a lot of kind of well-known people know a lot, but no, usually they're just experts in a very specific field. So I don't know any shizzle about CSS or CSS and JS. I mean, like all my CSS knowledge is like at least 5 years old. But I'm actually not that much interested in that.
Yeah.
But one thing that I really would like to learn, like on a very mature level, is like GraphQL and how that remodels how you interact with the backend. And it's on my to-learn list for a very long time. But I just wasn't forced by some project so far to really grok it.
All right, thanks for your honesty.
That's an epic answer.
Exactly. Oh, one more last question.
One more.
Your speech was called, your talk was called MobX The Journey.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite Journey song?
That's a really difficult question. The first thing that pops in my head is Africa from Toto.
Yeah, well, that's your favorite Journey song. That's fine.
Yep. Okay. Good answer.
Thanks for your time. And have a nice rest of the conference.
Thanks. Welcome.
Yes, semmoista settiä. Ihan mielenkiintoisia kommentteja tuli esimerkiksi Reduxin tarpeellisuudesta, josta, no, en tiedä, oliko yllättynyt vai mitä, mutta siisti kuulla tuommoiselta tyypiltä, joka oikeasti vähän niin kuin työkseenkin miettii sitä tilanhallintaa. Tilallinen kaveri.
Tilallinen. Mä tässä niin kuin... Kun talollinen ja tila... En mä tiedä. Ei, seuraava talkki, niin siinä oli tällainen David Corsid, joka oli muistaakseni Microsoftilla töissä, mutta on tosiaan tämän X-State-nimisen tilanhallintakirjaston kehittänyt. Se on tämmöinen tilakone.
Kyllä. Pystytään mallintamaan niin kuin applikaation tilasiirtymiä ja mitä tiloja yli. Vähän niin kuin liikennevalothan on se klassinen esimerkki.
Että tuolta saa tulla, niin silloin tuolta ei saa tulla. Ja sitten siirtyy vihreästä keltaiseen ja keltaista punaiseen
niin,
ja punaisesta vihreäseen.
Ja... Punaisia päin ei saa mennä ja ei saa pyöräillä jalkakäytävällä.
Niin, no oikeastaan itse asiassa se on kyllä paremmin sitä tilakonetta tätä kyllä kuvata itse asiassa liikennevalo, että se muuttaa sitä tilaa siitä punaisesta vihreäseen ja keltaiseen ja näin. Se on ehkä parempi.
Just näin. Ja tässä tuli aika mielenkiintoisia pointteja siitä vaikka, että miten niin kuin nyt kun koneoppiminen on kovassa huudossa ja voisiko sitä yhdistellä näiden tilakoneiden kanssa siihen, että saataisiin tehtyä vähän niin kuin, no niin, miten sä sanoit sen tosi hyvin, niin kuin painotettua niitä eri...
Niin siinä, jos kuvittelet tilakonetta, niin siinä on sulla on niin kuin sellainen solmujen verkko, miksi sitä kutsutaan graafi, josta sä voit siirtyä solmusta toiseen, mutta sä voit ainoastaan siirtyä sellaisia ennalta määrättyjä reittejä, että jos nämä solmu A ja B on yhdistetty, niin sä voit mennä niiden välillä. Ja nyt sitten, jos tähän lisätään jonkunnäköinen analytiikka, että minkälaista reittiä ihmiset siinä sovelluksessa kulkee tai minkälaisia reittejä, niin sitten sieltä varmaan muodostuu joku sellainen todennäköisempi reitti, jota niin kuin enemmän poljetaan. Niin jospa se käyttöliittymä voisi jotenkin lennossa sitten pikkuhiljaa muokkautua sen suuntaan, että se tarjoaa automaattisesti näitä tällaisia
kyllä.
polkuja, vaikka silti sallii sitten ne muutkin tietysti.
Jep.
Niin kuin, sillä oli esimerkkinä just tämä Microsoftin klippi. Työkalu tämä. Looks like you're writing a letter.
Jep. Se vaan toimii. Mutta mennään kuuntelemaan.
Joo, Davidin haastattelu. So, hi David.
Hi.
You were the third talk today?
I was the third talk, yes.
Third talk, yeah.
Yeah.
But in the state management slot, I don't know, it was like a rough slot, but But awesome talk.
Thank you.
Yep.
Didn't manage to see your last year's talk, but I've heard you in talk about X-State in another podcast I listened to.
Yeah, in a couple podcasts, actually. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, actually, one of my colleagues saw your last year's talk, and he told me that, yeah, X-State is pretty much the best thing that you can use these days.
Oh, wow.
So he seemed impressed.
Yeah. Do you see X-State as a state management solution?
So X-State aims to be more than just state management. Whereas you have Redux and MobX for managing state, X-State is more for making state charts and state machines. But those could be useful in state management. And it sort of has a different philosophy than Redux as well, where it's not all about the global store,
yeah,
but it's about interconnected systems.
Sure, we heard a lot about behaviors today. And,
yes.
And that your system kind of also answers that question.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the two are very interrelated. The two concepts, behavioral programming that Luca talked about today, and also state charts, those are formulated by the same person, David Harrell, computer scientist in Israel.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
And they're both very related to each other.
And they are not two new concepts, I presume.
No. So state charts were first formulated in 1987.
Right.
And then behavioral programming came a little bit after that, but it's still, these are old concepts.
Isn't it fun how in the JS ecosystem we tend to invent all the things over and over again, like now we have package management and all the Java developers are like, yeah.
Yeah. So the thing with that is that we think we're inventing stuff, but really we're re-implementing half inventions of things that already existed many, many years ago.
Do you think that we are bringing anything new to the game? Like science is always based on previous science.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there is still active research, but it is not in what you think. Like, for example, with state management, there's nothing new there. But what is new is using things like behavioral programming and analytics to influence state with machine learning as well,
yeah,
and influence our user applications.
Yeah, that was wild, the analytics part in your talk. You didn't have the time to go deep into the how, but it was really interesting. The only thing that I usually get a bit scared is that if I don't somehow see how the application is going to absolutely work, if mm-hmm. there's going to be some uncertainties. But
yeah, right. Is it difficult to test something like that?
So actually, I'm going to be giving a talk on this later this year and putting an article out, but there's something called model-based testing, and this is also an old idea, but it's based on the fact that if you have an abstract model of your system, such as with state machines, state chart, behavioral programming, then you could automatically generate tests that go through every single edge case and navigate through every possible scenario that the user could use your application. So testing actually becomes easier and automated.
Oh, right.
That's pretty wild. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
So I'm going to start to optimize towards that by not doing tests now, so I can just reap the rewards.
Right.
I don't know.
So, yeah, we had proper questions for you as well. So what do you think about the current state of state management? Do you think it's a solved problem?
It's not a solved problem, and that's because it's sort of all over the place. We have ideas such as Redux, where Redux was very influential in influencing developers to use events rather than directly manipulating state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a very important concept.
Yeah.
But we still need to rediscover some of the older, more prominent concepts. And we could borrow things from game development, from distributed systems. So one of my favorite things to talk about is the actor model.
Uh-huh.
Where instead of having a huge global store, instead you have separate entities that communicate with each other by message passing in a hierarchical way. And so that fits very well with behavioral programming and state charts. And so we're still a long way from adopting these old and well-established patterns. But that's what me and many of the speakers here are trying to change.
That's a great answer. Yeah.
Yep.
I had no idea. I was just like, yeah, the default is we take React and we take Redux and, mm-hmm. and React Router
and go.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so, yeah, you seem to know a lot about state management. What is something that kind of takes you out of your comfort zone? Something that you would want to learn maybe in the future?
something I want to learn? definitely machine learning. So today's topic on analytics, it was sort of my introductory knowledge to machine learning and reinforcement learning, but those are two topics that, number one, it's so much math and data science involved. I love math, but there's so many concepts that are just completely foreign to me. And also just being able to apply the machine learning techniques to our applications is a really exciting idea. But of course, machine learning and reinforcement learning is just a very steep learning curve.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
That's true.
All right, we are about done. I have just one question. I heard you are from Orlando.
Yes.
What's your favorite Disney ride?
My favorite Disney ride. if you go to Epcot, there's so many good rides at Epcot. Uh-huh. But my favorite ride is just walking around Epcot because there's so many countries. Like I'm sort of tired of the rides, and you just walk around. You get a drink and some food from every country, and just have a good time with your friends.
All right, cool. Yeah. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No niin, se oli mielenkiintoinen tarina tilanhallinnasta ja kaikesta sen ympärillä olevasta.
Tuli mieleen niin kuin siitä niin kuin tilasiirtymien painotuksesta sekin, että sehän muutenkin ylipäätään on tosi hyödyllistä analytiikkaa, että mitä polkuja ihmiset siellä appiksessa kulkee. Sen mukaan voi sitten tehdä design-päätöksiä.
Mm, kyllä.
Ja just jos sen saisi niin kuin silleen visualisoituakin niin kuin graafina selkeästi, niin ehkä se ei olisi niin hähmästä.
Ja ylipäänsä se, että jos pystyy mallintaan jonkunnäköisenä vuokaaviona tai muutenkaan, että mitenkä siinä sovelluksessa on edes mahdollista liikkua, niin se saattaa kuulostaa sille tekniseltä ajatuksena, mutta se helpottaa monesti kommunikaatio ei-teknisten ihmistenkin kanssa. Että tässä tälleen täällä nyt pystyy touhuaan, tällaisia asioita täällä pystyy tekemään, tällainen tämä visari toimii ja tuo paljon konkreettia asiaa ja selkeyttää tietysti omia ajatuksiakin.
Olisi siisti testata just vaikka tuota X-teittiä ja niinku, ihan se, että sulla olisi niinku määritelty siellä koodissa se koko, ne mahdolliset polut, mihin on mahdollista mennä, niin siitä sehän avaa sitten hyviä mahdollisuuksia just siihen, että sä voit vaikka generoida sen visualisaation.
No sekin on totta.
Joku semmoinen random react-sovellus, niin siitä on pikkusen hankala ehkä. Niinku.
Jep, on. Mutta hei, kun nyt oli puhe siitä asiasta, mikä on hankala ymmärtää, niin seuraavat asiat oli kyllä meikälle sellaisia next level juttuja vähän.
Samaa.
Tällainen italialainen herrasmies kuin Luca Mattei oli puhumassa. Se otsikko, tilkintatteli, oli Up and Only Development with React, mikä kuulosti hauskalta. Ja Talkki kertoi tällaisesta johonkin vanhaan tutkimuspaperiin perustuvasta ajatuksesta, että ohjelmisto ei pystyisi kehittämään sillä tavalla, että aina vaan niin kuin kaataa lisää koodia koneeseen, eikä koskaan ota mitään pois.
Jep, aika mielenkiintoinen ajatus. Siitä oli ihan hyvä blogipostaus samalta herralta kanssa. Kannattaa käydä vilkuilleen tuolta show notesista.
Joo, Farsadin ja Lukan kanssa keskusteltiin tästä asiasta ja sitten tällaisesta behavioral modeling, whatnot, mitä siinä nyt sitten olikaan. Kaiken näköisiä tämmöisiä. Siinä vähän liipattiin näitä samoja tilakoneasioita, mutta ylipäänsä sovelluksen tilahallintaa. Olkaa hyvä, herrat. So, now we have Luca and Farzad here talking with us. Hi, how are you doing, guys?
Pretty good, thanks.
Good, good, a bit tired.
Yeah, another new one for us. We've been doing these English interviews. Our podcast is mainly in Finnish, so this is like out of our comfort zone now. And now we are doing like a stepping up the game with two guests at the same time. But anyway, can you please introduce yourself? Maybe starting with Luca and then Farzad.
Sure. Okay. My name is Luca Mateus, and I'm from Rome, Italy. Even though I just moved to Amsterdam 1 month ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Very excited about the food change, obviously, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
It's not also the weather, no. Yeah. But Amsterdam is great, so I love it. But anyway, so I work for this company called The Zone, which does sort of video streaming for sports. It's like Netflix for sports in a way. And I've been doing sort of front end development for the past 10 years. I'm 32, yeah. So I've been doing it for a long time. I've been doing React, and I'm interested. I'm very academic. I started a PhD in computer science. I dropped out, obviously, because it's like, you know, industry is so well paid. You're like, why are you doing a PhD? I'm sort of always regretted a little bit. Always want to go back, because what interests me mostly is theoretical things compared to maybe you know, frameworks that talks, or even though probably you guys will talk about frameworks, and I enjoy that as well. But you know, I like more the theoretical stuff, and that's pretty much it. So, yeah.
All right. So my name is Farzad Yousafzadeh, but since it's really long, I usually just introduce myself as Farzad YZ because that's easier, right? So I'm originally coming from Iran, but I moved here last year, almost a year now.
Yeah.
I pretty much like Finland now, especially with the summer. I come from a academic background in physics and astrophysics.
Oh, but yeah. Cool.
And all these like scientific programming with Fortran and MATLAB and Python and everything. But then once I started to write my own blog and said, okay, this is actually more interesting. So yeah. I switched to web development, and well, I just work now as a software engineer in Futurice, or Futurice, if we say in Finnish. But we do like any sort of client consultancy projects, and I mainly work in JavaScript and all the friends around it. Yeah. So as long as JavaScript go, I go.
Since you kind of both mentioned being theoretical in a sense, or loving the theory behind all of this, so what's your favorite programming language? Is it JavaScript or is it TypeScript? Is it something
so
else?
If you saw my second slide, I actually hate programming languages.
All of them.
I actually think, to be honest, they're all the same. Like that's my abstract view. I think it's like programming is just sort of a historical mistake.
There was a mention about the language Urdu in the slide.
Is
Urdu like a spoken language? I guess.
Exactly. Okay. I think so. It is a spoken language. That's why I guess the comments was he made that joke because
it makes no sense.
But more realistically, obviously, nowadays we have to. I mean, I'm a programmer, so. Saying that I don't like programming languages is just a hypocrite. But honestly, I mean, I like JavaScript, and actually, I'm a little bit. This is going to be controversy. I'm not really for TypeScript. I'm still don't understand. I'm very behind. I guess my theory is not helping me with that. But I'm very behind with the usefulness of types, apart from code editor kind of helping things. I just feel like. Should all be done by the machine. Like Svelte, for instance. I don't know if you guys saw this Svelte talk by Rich Harris.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Like, he really sort of changed the mindset about programming. Like, there's compilers that can do the heavy lifting for us, so we can program in this abstract way. Like, he introduced even this new syntax with dollar sign column, really weird for reactive statements. And so I think that, that's sort of my point of view.
Cool. What about you, Farzad?
Well, I actually kind of like scientific programming. I once wrote a program for an observatory so that they could just open their panels based on the like latitude and longitude and everything that. But it was really fun because it was practical. I really want to see like the impact of whatever I create.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like if I'm working on something like React, for example, it's kind of cool. Like, it would be cool because I can see that it affects many people's lives, actually, to some extent, by not using like the shitty things. So like if you use React, you're gonna have like best practices and like better approaches, so you actually save energy and it's better for the environment. But I like JavaScript because it's really productive and it just lets me do whatever I want. It's universal, I can do whatever I want, but I prefer more aesthetically typed languages.
Sure.
A bit.
By the way, it's cool to see that you can actually talk slow too. Your talk was quite fast.
I had to be fast.
yeah, under time pressure. But both of your talks were kind of like you were saying the same words, and probably also somewhat tangentially meaning the same things. But I don't know. Lucas' talk was. I think this episode is going to be posted after the videos are available, so people can check that out and then see this for the director's comments. But can you? I don't know if I can even ask the real correct questions. But do you, Farzad, have any questions to Luca about or vice versa about your talks? Because there was like slightly related.
So one of the things that I really want to know about the topic of your talk is that how can I apply append-only practices into my daily workflow? So how can I use it from next Monday?
Yeah, I don't know if you can.
Not like not everything in an abstract way, but if I want to start.
Well, yeah, it's sort of a... It requires a mind shift, to be honest. So it's definitely... The barrier to entry is like really high, in my opinion. And that's why I don't know if it's ever going to happen. But you can, to be honest, there's links at the my last slide, and there's resources. So if you want, you can actually download the code and you know, and run it in a browser. I showed, like, there's a video of the movie that was all done using this concept. So you can start with that.
All right, that's pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah, the only app and only thing that's usual to in our daily work is app and only CSS. So you usually only app and CSS at the bottom
actually,
of the file.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's interesting because I've given, like, the title was sort of me trying to play with a little bit with the audience. You know,
yeah.
Obviously, append only development is wrong, right? Why should everybody does it? Like, it's like I've been doing. My colleagues say when I show them the title of the talk, they're like, "Well, I've been doing append only development for years." So it was kind of, but that was the point. So I wanted to challenge the audience that you can do that and still, I don't know, have a manageable system.
Yeah.
With this. But yeah, should I? Maybe I have a question for you.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
In terms, I remember when. I think you were talking about Michelle's. I always forget how to pronounce his last name. But anyway,
Westrate.
Okay. He gave a wrote a blog post about how to that you were mentioning before. We were talking.
I saw UI as an afterthought.
Exactly, yeah. And I really liked the fact that he showed us a demo in this talk and in this blog, like in a video format, where he had a UI and then he opened the console. And with the console, all you was doing is changing native JavaScript data structures. And as he was changing these, like, I don't know, you know, an object deeply nested equals to true. And that, by pressing enter and executing that statement, it would change the UI. And that was sort of the concept behind how he abstracts the behavior or the, you know, the change of state from what the UI does. So totally coupled. You can replace the UI and still rerun the same statement, and it would rerun it on different UI, maybe in, like you showed, like in a React native or something else.
So you can have kind of the underlying logic being the same.
Exactly. So you can run the... Exactly. So that's what pretty much your talk was about. Yeah. And so I'm curious. Okay, so then what happened is Dan Abramov... Actually, I remember reading the thread about this post that he made. And he said, I think I'm also right, I agree with both, but he said that because with React, this is sort of not the practice that they're sort of sponsoring, at least the core team. They're sponsoring now with hooks and now with these ideas of suspense, where all the behavior should be tied to the components, to the actual UI components.
Yeah.
So it's getting harder to abstract, even though we have hooks. So my question is... so Dan came back with this thing and saying that, you know, actually you need to couple them because I think one comment he made that is that the fact that the idea of separating behavior and view, it's sort of been a magic dream that we've been sold by the gods, and It may not ever be what we need. That was sort of the general dance comments, and I wonder what you think about that. Sorry.
Well, I think it's kind of true because I mentioned in one of the slides and talk that you can't just model once and reuse everywhere because that's a true myth. You can't do that because UI is always about coupling to some extent. But the thing is, most of the behavior can be abstracted as a core behavior. So, like, the example was a video player. Of course, the toggling between the playing and the paused is shared and it can be abstracted. But the opening and closing of it, like a drop-down, it's still a behavior, but implementation behavior. Mm-hmm. We need to have a, like, distinct border between them. So you just abstract as much as you can. You're not supposed to abstract everything. I think Michael's article actually was good, but it was more like a proof of concept because he was also using observable and reactivity in the data structures, and I'm not sure whether that's the direction I'm going to go. I pretty much want to advocate more of like the way I want to do it is that I want the state charts to handle everything for me just as a pure computation machine, so I can just embed that as a pure function everywhere I want.
Yeah, nice one. One more small question for both of you guys. What do you feel is something that takes you out of your comfort zone? And what is something that you want to still be learning?
Can I go first? Right, there are a lot of things in that list. I certainly want to know, well, because as humans, we're not supposed to know everything, right?
Yep.
And we're all suffering from imposter syndrome because we think that other people know more than us, and sometimes it's true. But I personally want to learn, I think the future is in more like intuitive AI and machine learning thing. And probably it would be also practical to learn a bit of cloud. So, yeah, I think these are like the things I'm going to be focusing on. But all this behavioral programming stuff is so trendy and hot. But my problem with that is that I want to learn it, but it's just hard to find it practical a bit. So it's more like a playing around as a proof of concept thing. Yeah. Yep.
For me, okay, the question was what I want to learn, right? Or things, something like that.
Yeah. So you don't have to answer TypeScript, even though you don't know it, but you don't want to learn it. Something that you don't know, but you would like to know.
I don't know. It's a hard question. I would like to learn how to play the guitar.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be a technical skill either.
No, okay. Well, for programming, I would like to... let me think. Okay, I guess... I don't know. I just want to be... I want to have the feeling that I don't want to learn something specific, but I want to... I mean, I want to learn something specific, but I want to be inspired. This is why I go to conferences. I want to, have my mind, whenever I have those moments of Eureka, I don't know if that's how you say it in English, Eureka, you have those moments where you're like, wow, that's kind of, I don't know, I had some moments in my life about this, from a technical perspective, I had other moments, of course, but from a technical perspective, there was only a few, for instance, when I learned how Bitcoin works, this is just a stupid example, and I was like, wow, this is actually going to change the, but obviously it isn't. obviously. When I learned it from a technical perspective, I was so I want to have those moments. And my talk on behavioral programming sort of gave me that emotions. So I guess I'm looking for that. So I'm not, when I get that, then I'll learn. I don't know if that, maybe I want to try to read as much as possible. And I read a lot of academic papers, so it's pretty
cool.
Much.
Cool, so you don't yet know what you don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what I want to learn, I guess. I hope to be inspired by someone.
Cool. Hey, thank you guys for your time, and have a very nice rest of the conference. Now you're done. Your job is over. You can now relax.
Thank you, and an awesome podcast. I will listen to it when I get back to Italy, actually.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Nyt olette saapuneet jakson tärkeimpään osioon. Ihan sairaan hyviä haastatteluja ylipäätään kaikki noi. Mulla itselläkin tuli sellainen fiilis, että yllättävää, vaikka tuolla ei koskaan ennen olla, tai no ollaanhan me nyt ihmisiä haastateltu, mutta ehkä tolleen niin kuin livenä, niin kuin on the spot. Mutta kaikki meni tosi hyvin, ja kaikki tyypit, ketä haastateltiin, oli ihan äärimmäisen mukavia.
Erikoista, että ihmiset, yllättikö, ihmiset olivatkin mukavia?
No vähän niin kuin joo, en mä tiedä mikä siinä on, aina jos näkee ihmisen lavalla silleen esiintyessä, niin ajattelee, että toi on varmaan semmoinen
superstara,
että mitä se nyt mulle juttelisi, mutta sitten ei.
Niin.
Siellä kaikki.
Niin, ja sitten kun ne puoliväkisi otetaan tällaiseen suomenkieliseen podcastiin messiin, niin eihän siinä mitään, Kyllä me kiitetään ja kumartaa.
Kyllä, ja se oli jännä, kun monet sanoi sitä, että niitä jännitti enemmän se podcast kuin se itse esitys.
Se varmaan johtui siitä, että podcasti oli semmoinen tilanne, mitä he ei pystynyt itse hallitsemaan, että me oltiin sekoilemassa vieressä.
Kyllä, just näin.
Hei, Jacksonville-valinta.
Jacksonvillen valinnat.
Ole hyvä, Riku.
Yes, eli mulla olisi tämmöinen valinta tällä kertaa kuin Chernobyl-sarja HBOlta.
Chernobyl 86, vähän niin kuin Windows 95.
Chernobyl 86, just näin. Kertoo siis dramatisoidun version Chernobyl-ydinvoimalla onnettomuudesta. Ja mä sain tämän suosituksen mun rakkaalta ystävältäni Juusolta. Kiitos Juuso tästä. Ja suosittelen sitä nyt näin eteenpäin.
Kaikille lisää ahdistusta elämäänsä haluaville vai?
Just näin. On kyllä kyseessä on erittäin ahdistavasti kuvattu sarja.
Minisarja. Että toisin sanottuna, jos tekee päätöksen kommittoitua katsoa tätä, niin ei menetä elämästänsä kuin mitä? 5 tuntia?
5 tuntia. Mä jotenkin aina tykkään tämmöisistä historiallisista jutuista. No, on tämä nyt sitten kuinka realistinen tai tarkka kertomus historiasta kun on, mutta ylipäätään. Sanotaan vaikka joku Schindlerin lista. Todellakin hyvä leffa, kannattaa katsoa ihan itsensä.
Se on niin kauhean pitkä, että mä oon koskaan jaksanut katsoa sitä.
No,
kannattaa se
kyllä katsoa. Mua pelotti se mustavalkoisuus tosi paljon.
Pitääkö se katsoa yhdeltä istumalta?
Kyllä se pitää.
Mutta sitten, kun jos istuu samalla paikalla 3 tuntia, niin siinä väistämättä tapahtuu nukahdus. Ehkä jos se on tosi hyvä, niin sitten ei välttämättä
käykään. Niin. Mä oon kyllä myös semmoinen elokuvin nukahtelija. Esimerkiksi 2001 avaruusseikkailu on semmoinen, jota mä oon aloittanut kattoon varmaan ainakin 4 kertaa.
Se oli hyvä leffa, sen mä kyllä kattelin yhden istumalta. Mutta se johtui siitä, että siis, tiedätkö, kun se on tehty mitä, 1998 joskus silloin, niin kun sitä nyt katsoo edelleen nykypäivänä, niin sitä design-kieltä, miltä ne avaruusalukset ja kaikki tietokoneet ja kaikki näyttää siellä, niin se on siis, sitten kun ajattelet sitä silleen, että ennen tätä ei ollut oikeastaan niin kuin kukaan lanseerannut mitään tällaisia juttuja, että niin kuin ne ihan tyhjistä keksi, että tältä se niin kuin voisi näyttää se asia, tältä tulevaisuus ja kaikki semmoinen. Niin toki siis tietysti oli silloin näitä, sitä NASAn kulta-aikaa ja sellaista oli että niin kuin jonkunnäköinen pohja oli, mistä ponnistaa, mutta kyllä. Kuitenkin kaiken näköistä siihen keksittiin niitä juttuja. Ja se attention to detail siinä on ihan himmeä, niitä on ollut sellaisia nettisivuja, missä on jotain tekstejä, mitä siellä vessan seinällä on nyt zoomattu ja enhänsattu ja silleen, että siellä on just niin kuin jotain pitkiä ohjeita, että how to poop in space -tyylisiä juttuja, mitkä ei näy siinä leffassa silleen, mutta sitten on silleen vaan niin kuin hrup siitä ja sitten on ihmiset pongannut niitä.
Mieti, kun jos sä suunnittelet, vaikka Apple suunnittelee uutta kelloa, niin kuin sulla on kädessä, niin se on niin kuin yksi tuote, mikä suunnitellaan, se design suunnitellaan, mutta toi leffa, niin suunnittelet sen koko maailman, kaikki mitä siinä näkyy, jokainen pikku yksityiskohta.
Jossain leffossa se on tehty paremmin kuin toisissa.
Niinpä.
Toinen,
niinpä.
Just samalla lailla vähän toi Blade Runner oli myös sellainen niin kuin uraa uurtava ehkä, ehkä silleen, mihinkä nyt verrataan sitten sen jälkeen näitä asioita sitten silleen.
Kyllä. Mutta mitäs sulla?
Luonton kaunista Tšernobylista luonnon kauniseen Suomen luontoon. Mä oon kattellut YouTubea, kun mä oon näitä vaelluskamoja keräillyt ja haalinut. Ja tietysti sitten tapani mukaan mulla on sellainen, että jos jotain lähtee niin kun miettimään, että minkä rinka nostaa tai minkä mitä ikinä tekeekään, niin sitten ensimmäisenä pitää tietysti tehdä sitä taustatutkimusta silleen luokkaa 2 viikkoa ja käydä kaikki mahdolliset testit ja arvostelut ja muut sellaiset läpi, koska miksi ei.
Jep.
Niin YouTube on siinä ollut sitten isona osana. Ja sitten siinä samalla, kun mä oon kaivellut sieltä näitä eräjuttuja, niin kuin välinejuttuja, niin sitten siinä on altistunut myös sitten kaiken näköiselle tämmöiselle eräjorma ja eräjormatar videoille. Ja yksi tällainen, mikä ehkä enemmän jo niin kuin alkaa muistuttaa jotain luontodokumentteja kuin silleen tällaista eräseikkailua, niin tällainen tamperelainen herrasmies kuin Ali Leiniö on tehnyt paljon YouTubeen kamaa. Hän kulkee yksin näitä Suomen kansallispuistoja ja muita mettiä, missä saa kuljeskella ja usein leiriytyäkin ja kertoilee niitä näitä juttuja, mutta aika paljon on hiljaa ja kuvailee niitä maisemia ja nauhoittaa niitä luonnon ääniä. Ja se on jotenkin hauska silleen ajatella, että kun se menee siellä luonnossa yksin, mutta silti se jotenkin näyttää niin kuin se olisi koko ajan joku kameramies mukana, kun se selvästi niin kuin ottaa sen kameran, pistää se jonnekin standille ja painaa rekkiä, sitten kävelee 1,5 kilometrin päähän ja sitten kävelee takaisin sitä kameran ohi silleen, niin kuin, ettei edes huomaisi koko kameraa. Niin, niin. Tosi paljon tekee sellaista, mikä luo semmoista immersioa siihen, että mä oon vaan sivusta katsojana tässä ton reissuilla ja se on tosi mukavaa.
Niin kuin miettii se vaiva siinä editoinnissa ja muuta. Pitää olla oikeasti aika hyvä.
Joo, kyllä.
Tuolla on tommonen video kuin riippumattoilu, olennaiset asiat. Voit olla ehkä meikälle.
Hän majoittuu paljon riippumatoissa tuolla reissulla, joo. Mutta sullahan on jalkariippumatto jo.
Mulla on jalkariippumatto. Onkohan mä missannut jotain oleellista?
En mä luulen, että se riittää kyllä.
Sinä riität. Joo, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, palataan. Moro.